Hey guys, it's me, Rose. I'm here with another Breaking Code Silence interview. Miss Morgan was kind enough to share her story with the world in recent light of the new documentary that came out on Netflix, The Program. I'm sure all survivors are feeling a lot of things, and we are finally feeling validated, but it is pretty overwhelming for a lot of us, and I was so glad that she stepped up to the plate and decided to share her story. So here it is. All right, I'm here with Morgan.
Hi.
Hi. So yeah, I just kind of want to get started. What program you were at and how long, how old you were.
Yeah, so I was at Cross Creek Manor. I think we were there at the same time.
Yeah.
I was 15 when I went. I got there early February of 2004, and I left. I was pulled in June of 2005, about a week before my 17th birthday.
Okay. Yeah, we were there pretty much the whole time together then.
Yeah. Were you in B group or K group?
I was in C group with Corey first. And then I got, when he left, I went to Sandra's group in E group.
Okay.
Yeah. So you were there for...
I was almost right at 17 months.
Okay. So a little longer than me. Not much. what group are you in?
So I started out in A group with Ben. And then I don't know if you remember when they dissolved L group. And L group was gone for a little while. And then they recreated L group with Ben. And they moved me to L group. And they started funneling all of Ben's new girls through L group, and I was the only phase high enough in L group that could take Hope Buddies, and I think they did that by design. And then some of them would send then to A group after they got out of the teal shirts.
Oh my, I had no idea that was happening.
Yeah, I there was probably about a year where I was a Hope Buddy to almost all of Ben's new girls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I think at the most I had like six or seven at a time.
And oh my God.
Most of the time I was on silence, so I couldn't even really talk to them. So it made it a weird situation, honestly. The whole thing was, all 17 months was weird.
I mean, yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, I only had one Hope Buddy my whole time, and that was like right before I left.
Wow.
And that didn't go well.
Yeah, no, I had a lot.
Yeah, that's like, I didn't even know L group was a thing, actually.
Yeah, so it was, the first L group was Ron Junes. And I don't know why they dissolved it, but it was gone for a little while. And then they recreated it, and it was Ben's, and they shuffled some people around. I think it's when they started getting more girls, so they kind of had to.
Yeah,
but yeah,
they didn't really know what they were doing.
No,
actually.
No. Nope. That's pretty obvious. Yeah, no,
I know when you get there they're always asking like, why are you here? And we all kind of have a different answer than maybe we would say now.
Yeah.
But what was your answer back then?
I think it's pretty similar to what I would say now. So I was suicidal. I was self-harming a lot. Wasn't hanging out with, you know, my group of friends. I don't want to say the best group of people, because they all grew up to be really good human beings, that we were all having issues, family issues. And we were kind of taking that out on each other, I think. And I was pretty viciously bullied starting at second grade, really until the day I graduated from high school. And you can only hear so many times that, you know, you should kill yourself before you try doing that. So yeah. It just kind of, I think it was just more than what my parents could handle. I had been in and out of some psych hospitals. And the third time, I think it was the third time, there was this therapist at one of the hospitals who recommended my parents look into these longer term treatment programs. I don't think she recommended WASP. It was, I think she recommended like a one of those like equine wilderness programs.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents, my mom said that they looked around a lot and they called a lot of places, and most of them would not take me because I was suicidal. Cross Creek, I think they called the WASP number on the website or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right when the internet started becoming popular.
Yep.
And they called that main 1-800 number, and my mom just kind of told them what they were looking for, that she told them they weren't willing to send me out of the country, what my issues were, and they recommended Cross Creek to her. So that's where I ended up.
So was this discussed with you while that was happening when she was calling around?
No. So I kind of had a different experience getting there than most people did. I was not taken, and you know, in the middle of the night by escorts.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I was on enough psych meds that I was pretty docile, and I was not going to run away. My dad told me, he told all of us that he was going on a business trip. Turns out he went to Cross Creek. My parents knew at the time that he was going there. And they did the parent tour with him that they did, which I'll talk to you about that later, because I did some parent tours as well while I was mm-hmm. there. And they told him so many things, like, it was wild what he says now that they told him.
Like what?
Well, they made it sound like it was this really fantastic place, that, you know, it was going to be a more normal high school experience, that, you know, we would get to go to, you know, have dances with the boys, and we would get to intermingle, and that they did like equine therapy, and they
Ooh,
they
wow.
told him all kinds of stuff. And yeah, he came home with these pamphlets. I've asked if they have
the pamphlet
them, and they don't have them anymore, but it shows like boys and girls dancing together, and it shows them eating together, and it showed, you know, the track team and the basketball team, and they did have like the line dancing. I don't know if you remember that or the,
oh, I do.
The, you know, I joined the basketball team for a little while. I was on the track team, but what they don't tell you is that is what all goes into that, what yeah. is expected of you to get there. And it's almost impossible, really. And it's mm-hmm. impossible to stay at that place where you can stay on those teams.
Right.
But they didn't tell him that. I mean,
of course.
Why not. Would they, you know?
Yeah. So your dad goes and visits
mm-hmm.
and then comes back and says you're going.
I'm assuming that he and my mom had some kind of conversation before they talked to me. They sat my brother and me down. I think I was 15 at the time. My brother was 12. And he showed me all these pamphlets, and he told me what they told him, and that it was, you know, it was going to be really great, and I was going to have a therapist and do intensive therapy, and that basically I didn't really have a choice in the matter, and that either I could go, they gave me a choice in how I went. They told me that I could go with them willingly on my own, or they could have people come and take me there. And they didn't really describe what that meant at the time. Now I know what it means, but at the time I did not know that. So I opted to go. I think my mom and my brother took me. I went with them. We flew into, actually, they gave my dad a list of all the stuff that I needed. and we actually went shopping for it. And it was like a, it was almost kind of like shopping for your dorm room when you go to college. It was kind of a fun, you know, like this is a new start kind of experience. We packed everything up and we got on a flight. We flew into Vegas, drove the 4-ish hours, it felt like forever, to Leverkin, and that was that.
You got there. You got there. Mm-hmm. You say goodbye.
Did I get to say goodbye? I can't remember. It might have been very brief. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a long, drawn out sort of situation.
Right. Were you under the impression of like how long you were going to be there? Or like when was the next time you were going to see your parents and brother?
I don't think I saw my parents for, it was probably 9 to 12 months after I got there. They had come to visit, but they were not allowed to see me.
Right.
Like we weren't allowed to see each other. They, you know, they took them around the facility and she said that she looked at me through windows while we were in PE, but I had no idea that she was there.
And obviously you got an intake.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
I just remember crying a lot. We did the whole, you know, the strip search. I met my hope buddy there. There were a bunch of girls in there. I can't remember how many, maybe 5. Everybody was going through my stuff and handing me clothes and, you know, the whole, was it a 5-minute shower or something that we had to do? Mm-hmm.
The lice shower.
Yeah. Yeah. The lice shower. I think my very first strong memory is that when I went there, I had kind of a longer pixie cut and I wore, I think it was more than 2 hair ties in the front part of my hair. So I looked like Pebble from Flintstones. And I can't remember who it was, but someone got on to me for wearing more than 2 hair ties because they said that it was run plans. I'm like, what in the hell are you talking about? Like 2 hair ties. Turns out I went later. It was over a year later. I went to Ron meeting because it was a big freaking deal. And I asked him straight up. I was like, is this a thing? And he looked at me like I was an idiot. And he's like, that's not a thing. You can wear hair ties. Okay. So if you remember that rule changing, that's why.
Well, I remember that rule.
Yeah.
That we couldn't have 2 hair ties.
So it was made up, apparently. Somebody just decided that we couldn't. And when I asked Ron, he said that it was not a rule. So people started wearing 1,000 hair ties.
Yeah. And then he's like, maybe we shouldn't have done that.
You know.
Yeah.
I feel like he had bigger problems than how many hair ties we were wearing.
For sure. So are you immediately thinking this is not the place that was presented?
I was confused. Like it was more of kind of like where in the hell am I? Because I remember almost immediately it started with rules. All of the rules. And it was really overwhelming. And I actually have, do you have a copy of the rules sheet? Because I do.
Oh, yeah, I do.
And I remember being handed that. And like I picked a scab one day and I got in so much trouble. I got a Cat 3 for that. And I remember them telling me, you know, next time it's going to be a Cat 5 self-harm. Like, I picked a scab. Like, what is the deal here? It was overwhelming.
Yeah. You get there, you get to meet your group and your therapist. So you had been from the beginning?
Yeah. Okay. I had been the entire time I was there.
Okay. What did you think about him? Or did it change?
I guess. I'm not really sure. I guess it changed over time. Even kind of back and forth. There were times where he kind of presented himself as my friend. And then there were times that he would say things to me just kind of in passing. And there's one in particular that we can talk about later, but that I was thinking, like, what are you doing? What is this? Why are you the way that you are? And there were things that I kind of had, I was uncomfortable with. Like, I remember one girl, he really leaned heavily, because he was Mormon. He really leaned heavily into baptisms for the dead with this one particular girl. And I know why, and I'm not going to share her story. I'll tell you privately later why I think he did that. But he definitely played us, I think, a lot. And I don't think we realized at the time what was happening, just because he was kind of, I don't know if you remember Ben. He was very little and kind of mousy and very soft spoken. And in hindsight, I think he used those attributes about him to make us feel non-threatened by him.
Totally. Yeah, I have a very, very clear picture of him in my in my brain, but I didn't have like an interaction with him at all.
So, fun fact about him. So it was not long after I got out. I can't remember exactly how long, but there was one of the first Cross Creek Survivors groups. He was in this group, and he apparently, and I remember this happening and being like, what are you doing, dude? And I think it was right around the time that Ron got fired, where he was taking, I guess he was taking screenshots or whatever, but anyway, he was reporting back to Ron what people were saying in that group.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think Ron actually ended up calling a couple of people or reaching out to them. And it was a whole big thing. And a lot of us ended up leaving those groups for a while because it just, you know, we're not safe in there. There's, you know, people in there that are taking this information and passing it to Ron and Carr and whoever else. And I've been in and out of those groups ever since, just kind of like, okay, is it okay that I'm in here? Is he still in here? It was weird.
Crazy.
The whole thing was weird.
Like they, even after like spend time.
Yeah.
Like trying to like make our story untrue.
Yeah.
Oh. Ew, that makes me feel icky.
It was very icky.
Oh, Benjamin.
Yep.
What level did you get to?
I think the highest I got was 4.
Okay. So did you, I'm assuming you spent time on Staff Bunny?
No, surprisingly.
Oh,
no.
What?
They, I think... maybe one time, but not for very long. But no, I didn't really spend time on Staff Buddy.
So did you get dropped ever?
So yes, I got dropped several times. There were times that I tried to drop myself, but they wouldn't let me. And there was a lot where I would be voted up by my peers, but then staff wouldn't vote me up. So I would just kind of stay stagnant at a level for a while.
And you would try to drop yourself out of like
just frustration.
Yeah,
there was so like one particular time where that happened. I think I was a 4. It was the first time I had reached 4, and one of my hope buddies, I think I had 4 or 5 at that time. She self-harmed. She had a self-harm contract, and for whatever reason, Ron and Ben both made it very clear to me that if she self-harmed, it was my fault. Now, keep in mind, like at that time, I was 16. We were not in the same room. She was still in an orange shirt, so she had to sit in the hallway in the dorms with the staff. And that was you know, even beyond that, that was part of her self-harm contract, was that even outside of an orange shirt for a while, she still had to sit out with the staff.
Right.
She had self-harmed, and then I was brought a stack of cats for her self-harming, and I was told to write myself up for a blatant rule violation, which is a cat 3, and I think that's what, 50 points or something. And I remember the staff member that brought it to me, Miss Lori. Do you remember her? She had the really long blonde hair. She was super nice.
Maybe. I know more staff by like their faces.
Yeah. So she obviously, she brought the cat to me, and she, just the look on her face, she knew that it was wrong and she did not want to do it. And I basically just lost my shit at that point, and I just started cussing, like dropping F-bombs. I mean, yelling. I was over it. And I had to have written myself probably 15 or 20 BRVs. And when Ben got them the next day, because I had dropped, I basically had dropped myself, and I was in an orange shirt that next day. He and Ron made me keep in the orange shirt, but they made me wear my jewelry because I had already, I had also taken my jewelry off. And basically I had to parade around in an orange shirt with jewelry, and everybody was staring at me. I mean, there were a lot of rumors going around, but Miss Felicia, who fucking hated her. She was the worst. Every single time she saw me, she made it a point to get in my face and berate me. How could they let you keep your jewelry? How could they let you keep your face? You know, this was, you're useless. You're never going to graduate. You know, just like tearing into me every single time she saw me. And I can't remember how long that was. It was a while. But that was just one time.
And you didn't go like into worksheets. You're just in an orange shirt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, Miss Felicia.
She was the worst.
She really was.
She was terrible.
Yeah, she was she was on like the staff for worksheets a lot.
She was.
She really liked it.
And when she wasn't there, I remember her really liking B group, and I remember feeling really bad for B group because she was with them all the freaking time. All the time.
Yeah, she was like the way she looked at us in worksheet showers, it is burned into my brain.
Oh, like, I didn't like how.
Like almost like super sexual. Oh. Like it was very traumatizing when she was on when she took you to worksheet showers.
That's weird. I don't think she ever took me to worksheet showers. I think it was when I did, it was mostly Miss Stephanie, the really tall, skinny lady with the long
legs. Miss Stephanie, the one with no teeth?
Yeah.
Oh.
Her and Miss Colleen, I think, were mostly the ones that took me.
Yeah. She, I feel like Miss Felicia was on my worksheet showers like more than once.
She was the worst. I wonder, I wonder how she ended up, how things ended up for her after.
I know. Is she still alive?
I don't know. I mean, she has to be in her 50s or 60s at this point.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. I know. You think about how old these people are now.
Because it's been almost 20 years. I guess it will be next year for me. It will be 20 years out.
Yeah.
And
me too.
Yeah, oh, God. I know, right?
I'm like, I'm freaking old. I'm like,
yep, same.
But it feels like it was yesterday, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I say I'm 30, almost 36, and I still have nightmares that I'm going back, that, you know, my parents have shown up. And I think a few nights ago, I had one that my husband made me go back.
I've had dreams of like my partner at the time, whoever it is like making me go. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, right. Why would you do this?
I know. But my my night terrors stopped. I'll still have one occasionally, but they pretty much stopped when I went back and stayed at the hotel. It's a hotel now.
I've been considering doing that.
Mm-hmm. It's not like a, I mean, I went there with another survivor, and we just stayed there for one night. Yeah. And it was like, I think it was like $200 a night. Like, wow. It wasn't cheap. And it was super sketchy. And the family that owns it, I think, are really like annoyed with us going there. But I don't care.
Yeah. Well, what did they expect when they bought that building? I mean,
I know,
you know, they had, they to know. Have, yeah, they had to have known.
Yeah, they know. But it, like, something about being in that space as an adult and walking in and then leaving when you want to leave.
Yeah.
It sounds so stupid, and it felt kind of stupid. Like, okay, I'm just walking into this building and I'm just like going to spend the night and leave.
Yeah.
But I just, something subconsciously like clicked and changed.
Yeah. Especially because we weren't allowed to look out the windows. We weren't allowed to, do you remember? So those white composite fence slats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, oh, you could see clear through some of them, but we had to stay a certain distance away from the fence, and we had to stay, we couldn't look through because it was run plans. Mm-hmm. And you could be dropped for that.
Oh yeah. So I actually have an orange shirt.
That's
which is gross, but
I have the blue polo shirt that I came home in.
Oh no.
Yeah, I'll send you a picture of it. Yeah, I have the blue polo shirt.
The polo shirt, the basketball shorts.
Yeah.
Oh, but no, I have an orange shirt and I wore it and walked around. We brought like a basketball. I don't know if they still have it, but they, when we were there, they had the courtyard still and the basketball hoops, and so we shot some hoops. And we just broke rules in the bathroom, like in the room. We were just like talking to each other, yeah, through doorways, and like I took a shower, which was really strange. Actually, I think that was the most strange moment, being in that shower again.
Yeah.
And like yelling at her through, like, while I was in the shower, you know, taking a longer shower. And at this point, the girl's side, we were staying on the boy's side, and the girl's side hadn't been done yet. And it was like roped off, and we broke in and walked through the girl's side, which was like, just like wild. People just up and left.
That is
so. And so there was just shit everywhere, which was super weird. And then we got kicked out, but we took pictures and, you know, went through the whole thing. And it was kind of like when they went back to Ivy Ridge in the program and kind of went through it. That's what it looked like.
Yeah. The thing, I was really surprised. So in the program, one of the very first things that they showed was just the records all on the floor, just stacks and stacks of records. And I know people have asked about the records from Cross Creek, because I would like my records. And we can talk about this in a little while, but they put me on a very restrictive diet. And I was running essentially a 5K every day. So I had issues, like I was very malnourished, and it created issues long-term for me. Mm-hmm. And I want those records so that I can see, you know, what did they write? Who put their name next to these instructions that,
yeah.
And I've heard that either they're walled into some office at the hotel, or that the owners of the hotel got rid of them.
Yeah. And they very well might have, you know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Because I know for me, like, maybe the second day I was there, or maybe the first day I was there, I wrote a letter home.
Mm-hmm.
What was your, like, letters and or phone calls like with your parents?
I honestly don't remember much of the phone calls. I do remember one phone call specifically with my mom, and this was after they put me on this diet, and it was basically me just breaking down, telling her how hungry I was. And I remember, you know, Miss Jean, because Miss Jean was my family rep. Mm-hmm. She had to get permission from Ron to let me have snacks, and he wouldn't for months. he would not. And I mean, just for context, the snacks were a piece of fruit and a single serving jar of peanut butter. And he wouldn't, and my diet was, I was not allowed to have carbs, which, you know, fruit seems kind of like they didn't want me to have any carbs, no fruit, vegetables, certain vegetables were okay. They wanted me, most of my diet consisted of, you remember the chef salads that they made? Like iceberg lettuce with,
well,
I wasn't allowed to have the lunch meat. So I got the two boiled eggs with the iceberg lettuce and ranch. And that was mostly my diet.
Which, like, ranch is way worse for you than
right? You know, like, what, you know, whatever. It's, there was 1 month for 30 days straight, almost, I think it was almost 30 days, if not 30. And make this one make sense, because I still think about this. Like, literally, sometimes this wakes me up at night, and it will keep me up at night thinking about this. For 30 days, all the kitchen had to give me, because I think that was a very carb heavy month. They were doing, you know, like chicken strips or casseroles. They weren't letting me have any of that. So the only thing they would give me, because again, like, Ron had to approve what they were buying, and they were not prepared for kids with special diets. Mm-hmm. I had grape nuts, one serving of grape nuts, and a Yoplait for every meal. So three meals a day for 30 days.
So you were starving.
I was starving, but it's all, that's all carbs. That's all the things they told me that I was not allowed to eat. And one day Ben walked up to me while we were in line. So, you know, we can't talk in line. So I couldn't respond to him, but he said, "Oh, good news. Ron's not going to drop you." And I was like, "What the fuck are you talking about? Like, why would he drop me?" And this was in my, you know, doing my best era, trying to actually, you know, work the program and play the game and do what they want me to do. So I was so confused when he said that to me. And in our therapy session days later, he said, "Oh yeah, Ron was going to drop you because of the grape nuts and yogurt you're eating." I'm like, I wasn't choosing that for myself. Like, this is what they were giving me. And I had no say in that. So I don't know what you were expecting of me, but yeah, that's, anyway, the letters home. So
yeah,
I have my letters. I had my confession letter, but I think I threw that away a year or two ago, just because I had this really irrational, maybe it is rational, I don't know, this fear that I was going to, you know, die suddenly and my kids were going to find it. And you know, what were they going to think of me? And I couldn't give them context. But most of my letters home were kind of just asking, you know, how they were doing and telling them a little bit about what I was doing and asking for things that I needed, like, you know, shoes. There were several that I read that was, you know, me telling my mom that I was hungry and that I really needed something to eat. And there was a card that my mom sent me for Thanksgiving that said something to the effect of, you know, are you getting more to eat? I hope you're allowed to eat Thanksgiving dinner. And I was not, spoiler alert. I think I got turkey and some green beans, but I was not allowed to have anything else. It's mostly just stuff like that. They weren't very eventful. I did have one letter that I found. My very first Hope Buddy, as a level 3, she came from CASA when CASA closed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still really surprised that they sent this out and didn't redact it or anything, but it talked about, oh, I got my first Hope Buddy. She's from CASA by the Sea. It closed down for some reason. I don't know why. They won't let us talk about it. And at that point, I read that and was thinking, did you not have questions? Did you not try to look that up or find information? Yeah. Or, you know, but I'm really surprised that they let me send that out. Because
I am too.
They blocked out stuff far less damning than that.
Yeah. All my, they were all when I was on Staff Buddy, when I just didn't care anymore. And I was writing in crayon. And so my parents were just like, oh, she's just mad. you know, she's in trouble or whatever. And then the one I did get in trouble for, my mom sent a copy of it to, I think, my therapist. And I got dropped for it.
Oh, my gosh. Do you remember what it said?
I have it. And when I read it, even I am like, it's not that bad. Like, I'm really not saying anything. But my mom thought I was trying to be manipulative and, like, kind of subtly say that this place was bad. So.
And they dealt with that with the parents so well, because they drilled into the parents that, you know, they're going to tell you these things, but it's not true. Don't listen to them. They're just trying to manipulate you. When in reality, it was all true. It was as bad as we were saying that it was, but they really thought about everything about how to combat that, except for how to deal with us when we became adults, when we started speaking out about it.
Yeah. We're like, yeah, we were terrified.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you, obviously you got to phase four. So you did orientation discovery focus.
I did orientation probably about a dozen times. I can't even remember.
Because you had a bunch of Hope Buddies.
Yes. Yeah. We had to go. They had to start. I had so many Hope Buddies that they had to start bringing in girls from North Campus to come be with my Hope Buddies, because I couldn't deal with all of them in orientation at the same time.
So at least for me, my time in seminars was really traumatic.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about them?
What was your experience? You know, not great. So when I was pulled, I was actually in orientation with my 5,000 Hope Buddies, and I was actively being kicked out by David, by the big seminar guy.
David Gilchrist.
Yes, because I was tired of beating the same dead horse over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I started talking about how frustrated I was because what part of the progression that Ben had for me, he had this whole like written out plan. And part of that was that I was supposed to be, you know, weaned off of psych meds. And that day, or I guess the day before, the psychiatrist was there. And the previous month, he'd told me, next month, you're going to come in and we're going to like take this dosage down. And I was looking forward to that appointment because that was a prerequisite for me in order to go to phase five. So I kept waiting for them to come get me for this appointment. And they never told us when, you know, like the doctors or the psychiatrists or whoever would show up. You would just know because you would see them there. Or, you know, if one of your friends went for an appointment, they would tell you about it, whatever. So I had seen him there while I was getting meds. And they never called me for this appointment. And I was pissed. Like, I was so mad. And the next day, like that afternoon and the next morning, we did like a group share thing. And I had started talking about how frustrated I was about that and how I felt like, you know, now I'm being held back another month because I can't have this appointment. Mm-hmm. And I can see her face, but I can't remember her name. She was at North and she tattled on me. I was mad about this. And after we shared in group that morning, the next morning after this appointment was, I thought, was supposed to happen, this girl had stood up and she was bawling because she had left the bathroom fan on at North Campus. Oof. And she was afraid that she was going to be dropped. And I think probably in only the reasonable moment that David has ever had in his life, he kind of looked at her like she was dumb and he goes, "That, why are you upset about that? It's a bathroom fan."
And we're like, because we can't leave it on.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then he told her, you know, you're fine. Don't worry about it. And she's sitting down and audibly still distressed. And then he calls my name and I stand up and he just started tearing into me about how, you know, I'm never going to finish my program. I'm not working my program. I'm not trying hard enough. I'm going to end up dead on the street. I'm going to be here until I'm 18 if I don't choose to walk. And, you know, just, you know, all the stuff that they say. Mm-hmm. And as he is actively yelling at me, Miss B came in. She opened the door and she said, I have to interrupt, but I need the girl that you're yelling at. And so I went with Miss V and she took me into this room and I asked her what was going on. And she said, I can't tell you, but I, you know, just come with me. And she took me into another room and my mom was there.
Ugh.
And they did let me say goodbye to people. They were having group at the time. So I got to say goodbye to some of the people from my group. I think there were probably like, you know, 5 people in there just because I was with all of the other people in orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So that was as high as I got. And I genuinely don't believe that I would have gotten any higher than that had I actually stayed until, you know, if I had been there when I was 18, I don't think I would have reached level 5. I definitely would not have graduated.
Yeah. I feel the same way. But then I turned 18.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how was that? I mean, how was that seeing your mom? I mean, was that just completely?
I was confused. I didn't understand at the time that she was pulling me. It was, I mean, they had to tell me several times.
Hey, Ada.
They had to tell me several times that they were, that she was coming to get me and taking me home. And we left. And it was, so I ended up losing a whole bunch of weight while I was there because, you know, who wouldn't?
You weren't eating.
Right, yeah. So I had no clothes that fit me. So they let me go home in the shirt that I was, in the shirt and the pants that I was wearing. And we went to Target and the cashier was a guy. And when I tell you, like the amount of anxiety I had thinking,
yeah,
because he was just trying, this poor guy was just trying to make conversation and be polite.
Yeah.
And I kept looking at my mom and I'm sure I probably looked like a deer in the headlights, but she asked me, she was like, you know, you can talk to him. Why aren't you talking to him? I'm like, I'm not allowed to talk to boys. I'm not even allowed to look at them for more than 3 seconds. And I started having, she finished paying. We went to the car and I started having a panic attack because you're going to send me back. You're going to send me back and I'm going to be there until I'm 18. And she said, we don't have any more money to send you back. Even if we wanted to, we couldn't.
Oh my God.
So yeah, they pulled me because they ran out of money. And I think they had started to see the writing on the wall that this wasn't designed for me to graduate. And people did graduate.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to be really good about playing the game that they wanted you to play. And I just was not good at that. I wasn't.
Yeah. So I know you wanted to talk about like kind of some instances with Ben, if you wanted to get into that.
Yeah.
Or whatever you're comfortable talking about.
So there was that one instance where he, you know, it's like, oh, Ron's not going to drop you. The other thing that I found out actually pretty recently. So my best friend, I met in the program and I think I was a 2 when she got there. And when she got there, she was taken by escorts and she was pretty heavily drugged. So she didn't talk it took a while for her to be able to kind of come out of that and figure out what was going on. She got higher in the program than I did. I think she got to, when did home visit start? Was that at 5 or 6?
5.
So she had one home visit. She turned 18. And then she went home for her second home visit, and she was on track to graduate. When she went home for her second home visit, she says she didn't plan this, but I'm not convinced that she didn't plan this because it was perfect. She got home, and then when it came time for her to go back, she just said no. She's like, I'm not going. It's terrible there. I'm absolutely not going back, and I'm 18. You can't make me. They tried so hard. Ben and Ron tried so hard to get her back. And after the program came out, this is the first conversation that really in depth that we'd had about Cross Creek and the 20 years that we've been out. And I asked her how she left, because they had always told me that she graduated. So I thought she had graduated. I didn't realize that she walked. When she walked and they realized that she was not coming back, they weaponized me against her. And they, Ron and Ben, said that I was so upset. I was mad at her, that she had abandoned me and that I hated her. And, you know, all of these things that I didn't say because they told me that she graduated.
Right.
Assumed she did, because why wouldn't I? When about a year or so after I left, I remembered the name of the city that she lived in, and I ended up finding her address, and I wrote her a letter, and we ended up reconnecting. Mm. And in the first phone call we had, she said, I didn't think I was ever going to hear from you again. I thought you were mad at me. And I was like, why would I be mad at you? You didn't do anything. And we just kind of dropped the conversation there. We moved on to other things. But now, I mean, it makes sense. She thought I was mad at her because they told her that I was mad at her and that I hated her.
Ugh.
Trying to get her to come back.
Mm-hmm.
There were, with my confession letter, we all had to write a confession letter. It was a prerequisite for, was it level 2 or 3? I honestly can't remember.
I think it was 2. It was early.
Yeah. It was this letter that we basically had to write out every horrible thing that we've ever done. And in the program, I feel like Catherine did a really good job of really stressing the confession letter, and that a lot of it was honestly bullshit. I mean, I made stuff up because
me too.
I did not know what they were looking for. I didn't know what they wanted from me. And I would write it and I would give it to Ben, and he would come back, I mean, that day or the next day, and he would say, nope, this isn't it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I guess I'll try again. And I ended up just saying so many things that weren't true. And he kept saying, no, this isn't it. This isn't it. And I asked him one day, I was like, look, I really don't know what you're looking for. Can you please tell me? Because I am at a loss. And he kind of gave a hint, but it wasn't, he didn't really tell me. So I just kept adding stuff until he was satisfied. And my confession letter ended up being, it was like 30 pages long.
Yeah, of all bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, out of all of it, maybe 1% of it was true, and that 1% was exaggerated.
Oh, yeah.
Kept coming back and saying, no, this isn't it, this isn't it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there was that. Apparently, Ron and Ben were the ones giving the instructions on, because during the free time outside, you could, you know, like walk around or play basketball or sit around with your friends or whatever. They were giving instructions to the staff that I had to either walk or run the entire time. And I was doing that every day for almost 17 months. And if I wasn't doing it outside, I had to go in and do it in the gym because there was one point where I couldn't go outside because I was getting such bad heat rashes.
Ugh.
That I wasn't allowed to go outside because I guess they didn't want to get sued. So they would make me go in the gym and stand there with, you know, whoever the gym teacher was at the time and a staff member, and then they would just watch me run for however long. It caused a lot of like health problems for me long term, both, you know, physically and psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
Which is frustrating because I feel like, you know, there are things that I wanted to do with my life. Like, I wanted to, a lot of my friends run the Disney Princess half, and mm-hmm. they have a great time with it. And I'm not a Disney adult by any means, but it looks like a lot of fun. And I want to do those things. But as soon as I try to start running, it just all comes back and I just feel terrible. And I'm not at a point where I can make myself do that.
Yeah. I mean, I've never been a runner.
Yeah. I wasn't before that.
A runner in there. And, you know, I mean, I had my own kind of stuff in there, but I was so hungry in there.
Yeah.
That I would scarf down my food. Like every meal I was like starving. And I lost a lot of weight in there.
Yeah.
But when I'm stressed out, I lose weight. So I think it went either way for girls.
So for me, it created a lot of food insecurity issues. So mm-hmm. like even now, I have three kids. We have food. Nobody is ever wanting for anything. And we are very blessed that we are never out of food.
Yeah.
But in my mind, like intellectually, I know it's there and I know it's not going away and I know I can go get more.
Mm-hmm.
Psychologically, that's not where I am.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if I'm not hungry, sometimes I will eat because, you know, like, oh, well, we're going to go do this stuff out of the house. We won't have any food. So I need to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah. you know, that created a lot of other weight problems and metabolic issues. And it's very frustrating because I'm trying to teach my children how to have a healthy relationship with food when I don't myself have.
Mm-hmm.
So in talking to them, I'm trying to kind of remain neutral, I guess. We don't have good food and bad food. We have, this is more nutrient dense. This is, you know, better for your body, but you know what? Yeah, you can have this ice cream because sometimes this ice cream is going to be good for your mind. Because if you're having a bad day and you want a bowl of ice cream, okay.
Yeah. And I kind of got taught like a little indirectly in there, but like if I stay at a low weight, no matter what I'm eating, because I'm not eating great food.
Mm-hmm.
But if I stay at a low weight, at least I won't be badgered for that.
Right.
Like at least I won't have that to be berated on.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, my mom has a lot of food stuff that she kind of like passed on to us.
Same.
But I look at letters and I have letters of my mom talking about her food,
mm-hmm.
which is like very weird. And if I did well, my mom would celebrate that and have a piece of cake.
I have letters from my mom. So I think I was told maybe one time what my weight was. Because just for people that are listening, just for reference, we were not allowed to look at a scale or know our weight,
mm-hmm.
as there were girls in there that had eating disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I guess, felt like us, they would still weigh us, but they wouldn't tell us where we were.
Right.
And I was told one time how much I had lost and what weight I was at that time. And I remember getting a letter from my mom saying, you know, congratulations and talking about what a great job I was doing. I don't think she quite understood that I, you know, an eating disorder was kind of being forced upon me.
Mm-hmm.
But she said in the letter something about, you know, now I need to lose weight too. And throughout her life, there's been a lot of that. Like, you know, her, we look a lot alike. So her self-esteem issues rubbed off on me because, you know, people have told us all of my life how much I look like her. So if she points something out about herself that she feels is negative,
mm-hmm.
as a child, I didn't connect this, but now as an adult, I know, like, I saw myself this way or did these things or didn't like this about myself because my mom didn't like it about herself. Yeah. And I look like her. So I've internalized that as being wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely continued while I was there because she would send me letters like that.
Oh, so weird.
Yeah. and really, I'm honestly very surprised that with as much as they censored of our outgoing and even some of my incoming letters were censored, that they let that stuff through.
Yeah.
It well, doesn't make any
sense. Feel bad about ourselves.
Yeah, so. I mean, yeah, they definitely did that.
I don't think they were really thinking about that. They were just like, oh, that sounds fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also remember, so back to Ben, there was one group day where, so you know the Nine Inch Nails song, Hurt?
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of said what he was doing, but not really. He said he wanted to do an experiment with music. So he brought in a speaker, and back in the days of stereos and CD players, he brought one of those in and he played some happy upbeat song. I honestly can't remember what the song was. And then he started playing Hurt kind of out of nowhere. And then he kind of, I don't know, a bunch of us started crying, I guess, because we felt like we were expected to. I don't know. It was a whole weird, like, he wanted us to write how our lives were reflected in the song or something like that. So we were all, you know, thinking about what dirtbags we were for putting our parents through all that we had put them through. And, you know, of course that would be upsetting to any child.
Mm-hmm.
So that there was that, which was kind of weird. And he had us, I don't know if all the therapists did this, but there was this one poem that he really, really loved. And I cannot, it's a baseball poem. And we had to memorize that for certain phases.
Oh, yeah, we didn't have that.
It was, I wish I could, it'll come back to me. But it was very, there was a lot of baseball imagery, which was kind of weird. Yeah, and I don't know about that.
But yeah, we didn't have any. I think, you know, the therapists had their own weird things that they did. I don't think Miss Sandra was like into poems.
He was super into poems, and looking back, it's a little, I don't know. I mean, we were 14 to 18. We didn't know.
Miss Sandra used to like show me pictures of like dead prostitutes.
Cool.
Yeah. Because I got a lot of slut stuff.
Oh, which yeah.
It's just, I slept with some boys before I left. Like, it wasn't, you know, this big deal. But of course, in my confession letter, I said that I had prostituted myself, which was a lie.
So,
and
no, go ahead.
My mom thought that was true till I was like 25.
You know, there were a lot of girls that said that. Because, mm-hmm. I mean,
it's an easy one.
Yeah, it is. I apparently did all kinds of drugs.
Yeah.
And like, this is... yeah, there was, I remember specifically. So when I went, I was a virgin. I don't think I had ever even gotten to first base with anybody. But my parents were convinced that I was not. I don't know why they were convinced about that, but, you know, whatever. Anyway, so in my confession letter, I ended up confessing to sleeping around. And that led into a lot of very invasive gynecological exams. And I ended up having STD tests every 3 months that I was there for almost 17 months.
But you're not having sex in there.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. They tested me for AIDS every 3 months while I was there.
Oh,
the
wow.
The first 6 months, it was they tested me when I got there. And then it was a month later, they did another blood draw for that. And then they did one 3 months later. And then after that, I ended up looking at, you know, what is the protocol for AIDS testing? And it's, you know, I think it's like immediate and then like every, you know, 3 months for a certain period of time and then 6 months and then a year. And then it was every 3 months while I was there, which I'm kind of convinced that maybe that was insurance fraud-y. And what I try not to think too much about this now, because it just, my mom isn't or wasn't, or she retired several years ago, but at the time that I went, she was she worked at a gynecologist's office, and she had spent most of her career up to that point as an L&D nurse. So I don't know where the disconnect was. She should have known what that protocol was, but at the same time, I'm kind of wondering, okay, well, what did they tell her? Like, did they tell her it was different in Utah? Did they tell her that there were like signs? Did they tell her that the tests were inconclusive? And I've thought about asking her, but at the same time, I don't want to know. And I ended up having, I think before I went there, I had maybe one like pap smear. And when I was there, I had, every time I had a blood draw, I had like a gyno exam every time.
Right. As a virgin.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder, because the guy that did it, Lou, he was the doctor that was charged and convicted of sexual assault on girls that were there. So.
Oh, I didn't know he was actually charged.
Yes, he was charged. It was a number of years ago. I'll see if I can find it and send the articles to you. But yeah, he was charged. I try not to think a lot about it because I'm like, okay, well, does this count? Like, does that... Because I couldn't really say no. Like, I wasn't in a position to refuse that.
Yeah.
So how do I compartmentalize this? Like, how do I don't know. It's a whole weird situation. But there was that. There was one time I had a pilonidal cyst, which is a cyst at the base of your spine. Basically, it's caused by hair growing in backwards. So basically growing into your body instead of out.
Oh, wow.
And it was super painful. And do you remember that I found out later that she was an EMT basic? So I had thought she was a nurse, but she was not. Real short hair. The lady at the medicine counter had an attitude all the time. Yeah. Basically, your arm could have been falling off and she would have told you you were lying about it.
Yeah.
And I kept telling, I mean, for a week, it's like, look, it hurts. There's something there. Can you please look at it? And for a long time, she said no. She said that I was making it up to get over it. And then there was one day I came up to the window and I was crying because it hurts so bad. Like, it's so much bigger. It hurts. Please look at this. And Lou was there that day. She rolled her eyes at me and said, yeah, sure, whatever, come in. She looked at it and said, oh. Left the door open, walked out into the med room and said, like, yelled, Lou, you're going to love this one. Like, are you fucking kidding me right now? Like, not even an, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, you're right, or wow, this must be painful for you. Lou, you're going to love this one. Okay, cool. They took me to, it was that evening, they took me to this doctor in, I think it was in St. George, who looked like he got his medical degree during the Civil War. This guy was ancient. And he lanced it, but apparently those require surgery to fix. So I ended up getting, because he didn't fix it correctly, I ended up getting another one a couple of years later that ended up kind of encasing my vertebrae. And I had sepsis because it was so, like, from the time I noticed the first twinge of pain to the time I was, you know, barfing on the floor in my bathroom was 2 days. Because they didn't fix it appropriately. So there was, you know, and there were girls there that I remember. There was this one girl, I want to say she was in D group, who had boils really bad. And she had them all the time, to the point where girls were having to basically carry her around because she couldn't walk because they were so painful. I mean, stuff like that. It was terrible.
Yeah. I mean, the medical stuff is like, you know, I mean, just pure neglect.
Yeah. And I mean, they weren't even paying for it. So I don't understand why, what they were really, aside from, you know, the pure satisfaction of torture, why they were choosing not to get us appropriate medical care, because our parents were paying for that.
Well, they wanted to pocket the money, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
You get home.
Mm-hmm.
You're how old? 17?
I was 17. I turned 17 a week after I got home.
What was life after that?
So immediately, I mean, right away, I had to start summer school because the credits, the classes that I had taken while I was there didn't convey geometry. I was in geometry at Cross Creek and I was having a really hard time with it. So I have two learning disabilities. They both affect, you know, how well I do math. And instead of actually teaching me the math, they took me out of, they didn't even consult my parents about this one. They just kind of did it. And I saw that in a letter. I told them, oh, I'm taking this new class. And my mom wrote notes on my letters about what to talk to Ben and Miss Jean about. And one of the notes said, what in the hell is married and single life? So they put me in this class called Married and Single Life instead of doing math that is required.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they were expecting that I was just going to be there forever and I would get my fake diploma there. I don't remember really what the class was about, but when I went back to school, because I still had to finish my senior year, I had to take, I think I took like Algebra 1 or something in summer school. And I mean, I had been home for maybe 2 weeks when this started. So I was in a class with a bunch of guys, and I still at this point, other than my brother and my dad, I really wasn't talking to guys because I had spent so long not doing that. And it really, I mostly held myself together until it was near my 18th birthday. And I kind of just, I had a breakdown because, you know, I got back in with the same group of friends because, I mean, they were the only ones that would talk to me. I was in the same school district that I had been in since the second grade with the same people that were causing problems in my life before that. I almost got in a fight with a teacher. It was around Thanksgiving, whenever basketball season is, the end of basketball season. A lot of these girls that I had issues with were on the basketball team or on the varsity basketball team. And they were going to state and they wanted everyone to come out of the classrooms and, you know, cheer and wave for them. And I was not having any of that because why would I go out of my way to celebrate you when you've treated me like shit for 10 years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this teacher, because they didn't really teach us coping skills there, right? They just taught us, we kind of just learned how to survive and do what we needed to do to get through.
Yeah.
This teacher came up to me and she grabbed me and she like pushed me up and said, you need to go celebrate these girls. They worked hard. And I told her, like, if you touch me again, I'm going to deck you. I'm going to punch you in the face. And they called my mom about that. They called her. And, you know, fortunately she took my side, but I had a lot of social issues
mm-hmm. with
the other kids because we didn't have, in such an important time in our lives, we didn't have normal social interactions. We were very limited on how we could talk to each other, when we could talk to each other, who we could talk to. I spent probably 6 to 8 months of my time there on silence.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there were like a whole 6 to 8 months I couldn't talk to anyone at all except for food, water, bathroom, or meds. I mean, and that was just the staff.
So what's your relationship with your parents like now?
My relationship with my mom is pretty good. My relationship with my dad, it's strained. I wouldn't say it's bad, but we're very surface level. Because I've had some conversations about this with my mom, and I tried to have some with my dad earlier on, I want to say within the first 5 years of me leaving, and he was not receptive to any of that at all. He basically told me that they did what they had to do and I need to get over it. And yeah, I do believe that. I do believe that they were overwhelmed and that they did what they felt like they could do. I do believe that they felt like they didn't have any other choices. Because I had been in therapy for years. I had been in and out of these psych hospitals for years. And I had been seeing psychiatrists and they'd been doing all of the things, but it wasn't getting better. If anything, it was getting worse. And they were desperate. And I kind of am taking a different stance than I think most survivors. I'm not mad at them for sending me because I see from both sides because I was complicit in lying to parents as well.
We all were.
Yeah, we all were. But at the same time, I think I dropped enough hints and there were enough red flags that they should have been asking some questions at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that that was done. I don't know that they really did their due diligence. Yeah. So I don't really talk to my dad about it. I don't really talk to my mom about it anymore either. Every once in a while, I'll ask a question. But it just kind of, after I get the answer, we both just kind of drop it.
Have they watched the program?
No, and I am not. They don't have Netflix. I've told my mom that it exists. I've told her that I'm not telling her where it is. And if she really wants to watch it, she's going to have to figure it out on her own. And basically that if they choose to watch it, I don't really want to have a conversation with them about it afterward. I know from each of them, I know what I'm going to get. And I just don't have the mental or emotional capacity or space right now to deal with that.
Yeah, I get that.
My friend's parents, they did watch it. And bless her, because she watched it with them. So.
Ooh, Lord.
Yeah. So, you know, that'll be interesting to talk about. I'm going to go visit her in June, and I'm bringing all of my letters and all of the stuff that I have, and we're just going to hash it out.
Oh my God, I love that.
So it'll be interesting to see how this goes because, yeah.
I mean, how have you been? It's been so different for a lot of us. And I talk about Cross Creek all the time, right? I always kind of have. But watching it, my life has been, I've felt different about it after watching it. So how have you felt?
I've never felt very positively about it. So I was never put in any of the isolation rooms. I was never restrained. We all had some flavor of psychological abuse. And then I had issues with, you know, like medical neglect and medical abuse. And so my experience there, I think, was different than a lot of the Ivy Ridge kids.
Mm-hmm.
I did see my fair share of, you know, Sammy taking people down for things that they did not need to be restrained for, which there's one instance in particular that still I think about a lot. And I've thought about a lot over the last 20 years. But I've never really felt positively about it. And my friends, when I came back, had a lot of questions. And for a long time, I didn't really talk about it in depth. I just kind of acknowledged, like, yep, I was there. But eventually I did talk to them about it some. I didn't go into some of the details that I've gone into here. I've told my husband some about it. He's watched the first episode. My thing was I didn't want to watch it with anybody else. I wanted to watch it by myself. I didn't want to have to field other people's thoughts and emotions while I was dealing with my own. I didn't want to have to answer questions while I was dealing with it. So he's going to finish it. And I've told him some things, but I haven't told him, I think, everything.
Mm-hmm.
There are periods where I will talk about it. Usually if I see a friend that is having issues with their teenager and they're saying, you know, oh, I'm going to send them here to some camp or I'm looking at these places, I will immediately send a message and be like, hey, just so you know, I was in one of these places. This is where I was. I would really love to talk to you about this and try to help you find other options.
Good.
So I try not to make it, you know, my whole personality, but at the same time, it kind of is. I think I've seen a therapist one time since I've been out, and it wasn't a bad experience. It was more of like a 5-minute phone call during the pandemic of like, hey, are you going to kill yourself? No. All right. Well, I'll talk to you next week and see how you're doing. I'm like, all right, this really is not helpful. And that's not why I'm coming to you at all. Like, I'm not in that place. So I don't know why this is weird. But I'm more just kind of afraid that it's going to be a lot of the same that it was at Cross Creek. And I know that I can just get up and walk away. No harm, no foul. You know, if I don't jam with someone, I can just leave. But, you know, like you said, when you stayed there, just the thought that you can't leave, just going back into that space and thinking, I'm trapped. That's been holding me back. So I'm going to see a therapist for the first time, I think, next week. And we'll see how it goes. But
yeah, I mean, I think we're all very scared of therapists.
Yeah.
I'm lucky with mine. Her sister was at Provo Canyon. So she knows I'm a program kid. But even so, I think it's hard for us to get all the way vulnerable with anybody.
Right.
Speaking for myself. I think our relationship with therapists and also other people are kind of more to surface level than other people.
Yeah.
In my experience.
No, I agree. I feel like that's, you know, just with program kids in general, that's pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I met another program kid recently. He's my husband's coworker. He went to CASA for six months. He was at CASA and he goes, the thing he told me, he was like, they gave us chicken salad a lot. Do you know what do you want to guess what the chicken was?
Oh no.
Seagulls. He said they were killing the seagulls and feeding them the seagulls.
No.
And making it into chicken salad.
Oh, hell no.
I know, right? He told me that and I about died. Oh, right there. God. Dude.
Oh, my God. That is
awful.
Queasy. Oh, my God. Yeah. No, 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 no.
Yeah, it's a small world.
I run into just in my life, like people that have been sent away. And it's like there really are like a lot of us. There's a lot of us. Yeah. Which is probably why this world is so.
Yeah. Well, what's in hindsight, and they said it too on the program, was, you know, there were so much more of us than there were of them. Why didn't we just grab somebody's key card and walk out? Why didn't we do that? And
I was so scared to even look in a direction of anything, let alone take someone's car, like key.
There was one time I remember I was on silence and I had this hope buddy who I've got to tell you about how she left, because it is a wild story. We had this new staff member and I can't remember her name, but she was little. So I'm 5'3" on a good day. She was probably like 4'8" and maybe like 90 pounds soaking wet. She was really little. And my hope buddy was this really tall girl, like definitely had seen some fights, you know. And she asked, we were getting ready for group, and the staff member was sitting at a table, and my hope buddy had seen a picture that she put in her little key card holder. And she said, oh, is this your daughter? Can I look at it? And she grabbed the key card and I about had a whole stroke, but I can't talk, right? Because it's not, because saying, hey, you can't give her permission to break the rules is not food, water, bathroom, or meds. So if I had said anything, I would have gotten in trouble. So I wrote it down and shoved it over to the staff member. And she was like, oh, it's fine. I told her she could. And the next day she was gone. We didn't see her after that. So I don't know if somebody else had said something or if there was something else going on there. I don't know. But after that day, that was her last day. We never saw her again.
Oh, no.
But that hope buddy, after this had happened, I can't remember how long. I want to say she was only there for a month or so. We were in group. And there was another girl in our group. I think she was visiting from North Campus because they had the higher levels visit the groups for, what was it, like a week or something. They would just kind of pair with a group. And she was turning 18. And they were talking about, Ben was talking about with her, you know, well, how did you make the decision to stay after 18? What was your exit plan? You know, just asking her about that. And then my hope buddy, she goes, what do you mean she could have left when she was 18? And, you know, we all had to explain to her, like, yeah, they can't legally keep you here after 18. So you can either choose to stay and finish or you can choose to leave. She said, I'm 18, and caught everyone off guard. Ben and Jean and another staff member took her out. And we never saw her again. And apparently what had happened, I ended up finding this out years after I left. Her mother had photoshopped her, like basically taken her date of birth and put it on her sister's birth certificate and put her sister's date of birth on her birth certificate. So when she sent my hope buddy, and they had to, you know, she had to prove that she was the age that she was under 18. She gave a doctored birth certificate to Cross Creek. Oh,
my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the thing.
She didn't get in trouble for that? That's crazy.
I don't know what happened. I kind of talked to her one time briefly, maybe 5 or 6 years after I left, and I haven't been able to find her since. The whole thing was just so weird. We ended up asking, I think the next day in group, what had happened. And they gave us a very watered down version of it, that basically her mom had lied. She was actually 18 and she didn't want to stay, so they had to let her go. I don't know if they let her go with the exit plans that they gave everybody else when they turned 18. Mm-hmm. I know my friend's exit plan was $50 in McDonald's gift cards and a ticket to Salt Lake.
I mean, that's what I got minus the McDonald's.
Yeah, they told her $50 in McDonald's gift cards. I guess that's what her parents had worked out. Her parents wanted to get her an apartment there in Salt Lake and help her with bills. But Ben talked them out of it and talked them into $50 in McDonald's gift cards and a ticket to bus ticket to Salt Lake.
Yeah. I mean, they make it scary so that you don't take it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I would not have taken that just because I don't think I mean, I didn't know anything about the real world. I would not have survived.
There, I mean, I took it.
Yeah. I mean, and there are people like you that do take it and end up doing really well. I don't think I'm one of those people.
Yeah. So. I mean, my father did pick me up eventually, but yeah. It's, you don't think that that's going to happen.
Right.
So, I can't believe I took it.
Hey, you know, I'm glad that you did because it seems like it worked out for you.
I mean, eventually, I had a lot of, over a decade of just not being well.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean.
And I'm still not well. I'm like, am I ever going to be well? I don't know. But
what is well? I mean, really, I find, and I don't, I'm sure you probably do this too. I find myself comparing myself with other people that haven't experienced these things. Mm-hmm. What I'm finding is that a lot of us, because we were in the situations that we were in, a lot of us are kind of better adjusted.
Yeah.
And this is going to be terrible, but we're better at hiding our emotions and kind of just pushing through until we can get to a point where we don't have to do that. Then I feel like a lot of the general just population is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think when things happen that aren't either like fair or like to my liking,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, that's just how it is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, but, same.
And people are a lot more sensitive, which I'm like, I don't like that, but I'm not going to throw a fit about it.
Right. And that's something that I'm definitely having to work on. But then there's also the situation of, am I getting that angry about that situation because my parents didn't get that angry about what was happening to me? And I don't want that to happen to my kids. So I'm having to find that balance.
Mm-hmm.
For putting me in a married and single life class, they really did not prepare me for being a parent or any of that. So I feel, we definitely, especially for those that turned 18 and did take their exit plan, it's like, and I remember some of these girls being in there, starting out in K group at, 10, 11, 12, being there forever, either getting pulled or taking an exit plan when they turn 18 and then coming back because it's like, you can't survive in the real world. Because you're not taught real world stuff. You're not taught how to deal with your emotions. You're not taught how to make yourself dinner or, function by yourself. And I remember the most we got of that from Ron in Ron meetings was, people would ask, well, if my old friends approach me, how do I get out of that situation? How do I say no? And he would have that girl or whoever asked the question come up and he would pretend to be her and she would pretend to be the friends and they would ask like, oh, do you want some weed or whatever? Or do you want to go hang out? And he would say no. And that would be the end of it. Like, you're not a 16-year-old girl. This is not helpful.
It's not at all.
We need real world actual help. Not you just sitting up there telling us to say no, because it's not that easy.
So is there anything last words?
I guess for people that are listening to this that are not program kids, if your child needs help, help your child. Do what you can to help your child. Don't send them off to some shady place to do it for you. Yeah. These places are still popping up under different umbrella corporations. Do your due diligence, research, talk to people, like actually talk to people that were there at these places, that know the people that are running them. I think, is it Norm has one now in St. George? Is it, I think Norm and Von Garrett called something totally different. But I mean, unless you do a real deep dive, some of these parents probably wouldn't know that they were therapists and complicit at Cross Creek.
Right.
Really, as a parent, do your due diligence. Talk to people that were there. Talk to the people that were under their quote-unquote care. And make sure that you're really doing right by your child.
I think that's the number one question I get is, you know, if I have a troubled teen, or I hate that saying, but if I have a kid that's not, you know, doing well, what do I do? And I'm like, well, fix yourself first.
Yeah.
You know, figure out why they're doing these things, because kids don't just do shit.
Yeah.
No, for no reason.
I mean, I know exactly why I was the way that I was. I mean, as a teenager, I didn't have, I don't think I had the ability to, or the language to say that, give those reasons. As an adult, now I do. But yeah, I mean, it starts with the parents. If your child is a minor and you are needing help, it starts with you. So absolutely, that's a good point. Fix yourself first.
Well, I'm so glad I could help you share your story.
Well, thank you for letting me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good. We need to, you know, do it for not only other people, but for ourselves. You know? So I applaud you for doing it, because not everyone feels comfortable with it.
It, you know, I wasn't always comfortable with it, but I think I definitely, if I don't know if Catherine listens, but I really appreciate that she and the others that participated in the documentary did that, because I felt like it took a huge burden off of me trying to explain some things, and it definitely helped me to talk more about what I experienced. And I think without that, I probably would not be talking about it right now.
Yeah. I know. I think we all have a very special place for her in our hearts.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
It was good to talk with, you know, somebody that was there with me, and it's been fun to catch up. I don't know if fun's the right word. It has been, but it has not been fun to catch up with other people that I know that have been there.
Well, yeah, thanks for being on. And yeah, I hope, you know, I hope this helps you in some way.
Well, thank you. Yeah,